Well, hello, hello, guys. You're listening to Beauty Bites with Dr. K, Secrets of a Plastic Surgeon. We have today on the podcast Drew Fine, CEO and founder of Define, which is an amazing aesthetic consulting company. What are you doing these days?
Awesome. Yeah, thanks for having me. It's so great to be here. So I'm doing some advising and consulting and fractional executive leadership for various aesthetic practices, aesthetic companies, and people looking to get into the aesthetic space. So yeah, my Define group is a fun little venture that I've been working on lately.
Amazing. I love how resilient you are and how you've influenced aesthetics in this industry so much. For those of you who don't know, Drew was at Galderma for many years. That's when I first met you.
Yeah.
Directing their marketing and
probably about 8 years ago now,
I think yeah, a long time ago, and I was like a spicy young upstart who met him for coffee, and I was like, why are you guys not doing more social?
I do remember, so I don't know if you remember this meeting. This was back in the early days of social media, and you were like, so you lead marketing at Galderma? I was like, yes. And she's like, well, what's your Instagram handle? Like, I don't want to get on Instagram. It's a pain in the butt. She's like, how can you be in charge of marketing if you're not understanding what the contemporary approaches are? So you gave me a nice kick in the pants. So I still do some social. I'm not as good as you.
Now he has a social media account. You guys have to go follow him. What's your Instagram handle?
24.
There you go.
My daughter asked me why 24 the other day, and I told her it's because that was my number, or actually my dad's number playing sports growing up. I was always number 12.
Okay.
My dad was 24, so that's my aspirational goal.
Fun fact about you.
So, well, yeah, no, you kind of kicked me onto the social media journey down the way. I'm not as good as many people, but enough to be relevant, and it's good to understand what's going on in the world.
I'm so proud to have got you on the gram. It's a bad addiction, but welcome to the gram.
it's good and bad, for sure. You know, I have teenagers like you do, too, and that's awful for the teenagers, so we try and be very careful. But they're also, if you talk to them, like, there are good things. There's great educational content. There's, you know, really great ways to keep up with people. You know, you get messages from people you never have talked to in years.
Yes.
And so, like, you know, with all the growth, you know, and the advertising and all this kind of stuff, we've lost some of the positive aspects of social. Those still exist. You got to be thoughtful and careful, and don't forget the real world connections sometimes.
That's right. Get off your phone periodically. But it's been so fun. I've introduced some of the biggest leaders in aesthetics to get social media, like Brent Saunders and you and a bunch of people that I've met along the way. But it's definitely influenced my career. I love that you know so much about this industry. You've worked in the C-suite at all these different companies, and now branching out and starting on your own.
Yeah.
What's been your biggest understanding and takeaway of how you think we should approach aesthetics as an industry?
Yeah, so it's been really fascinating to watch the evolution of it over time. So, you know, I worked at Galderma for a while. I was at Allergan with their Botox and Juvederm business. And then I worked with one of these large practice companies that was buying practices. So I've kind of seen it from all angles. And, you know, kind of have put it together. People have been asking me this lately. And I said, you know, the most interesting thing that I think I've kind of seen is the industry's evolved, and I don't think everyone always has the practice's best interest at heart. And so I've been telling people, it seems a lot of times people are really focused on building my brand or my service or my product or my great idea. And then they go talk to people like you and others, and they're like, How can I make it successful in your practice? And that's good, and that helps you, and it helps their brands, and it's definitely a way that works. I think there's a twist to it that gets really interesting, and the twist is the people who can change their mindset to a very, very customer-centric mindset and say, how can I make your practice successful first? Mm-hmm. And know that if I do that, whatever I'm trying to make successful is going to be successful.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of flip of mentality is where I see a gap in the industry right now.
Mm-hmm.
There's not enough people who are really focused on, like, how do I make my customer successful?
That's so true. I mean, as an injector starting out, we all start somewhere, right? You have to buy your first syringe somewhere, and it is very intimidating to work with these big monolithic companies that are so huge, have so many billions of dollars, and like they kind of say that this is the way. This is how you have to do things. You join, you learn our brand, you integrate your brand yourself with our brand. And I think that as an entrepreneur and as a physician, you have to think very differently. Like,
yeah.
I have to pick and choose and select an entire palette of what I want to build my own brand, right?
Yeah. And if a company can help you build your brand, then they should know that that's going to make their brand successful too. But that thinking's been lost. But again, the industry is much bigger. I started 9 years ago.
Yeah.
It's probably, I was looking at some data the other day, it's almost three times as big as it was when I started.
Yeah.
Which is just crazy to think. There's been a proliferation of new products, technologies. But the future continues to be really bright, right? This kind of regenerative medicine wave that feels like it's coming, that's going to be really big in the back half of this decade, new approaches to kind of marketing and customer acquisition, and you're still very underpenetrated. I know even though the economy right now is very choppy, I think the long-term trends still look really good. So more companies and people and products that can think about, you know, this customer-centric approach, making practices successful, changing kind of the way some things have evolved, I think that's going to lead to success in the long run. And if you're a practice owner, like I just didn't there with, you know, where I own practices, it changes your mindset. When you have a small business, when you've got a staff of people that you're really worried about, it kind of changes how you approach things. It changes what you're expecting for the companies, and it changes what you should ask for when you're working with different kind of partners.
I think that you definitely should have an ask when you work with the different corporations that come in, because they have a sell and they want to show you their products and they want to give you all their info. But I want them to bring some value.
Yep.
And so very often I ask them to help teach my staff, like how to teach them some marketing tips, how to teach them telephone skills. Like, what can we do? I don't need the staff to learn science and product knowledge as much, because that's kind of a physician-patient discussion or a provider-patient discussion, I think. So I think the value ask proposition is so important. How does an injector get out of the mindset of playing the game of needing to win tiers of success and awards and becoming from a gold, silver, diamond, platinum level? How, and every company has these tiers. What's the game they're playing with this?
Well, you know, this you're just playing into human emotion, right? The reason these loyalty programs work is because the loyalty programs work. My usual advice to this question or others, I actually answer in a different way. So my advice to people is, don't try to chase what someone else is putting in front of you. The first thing you got to do is you got to know what your brand's all about and what you want to be true to. I don't see enough people kind of doing those exercises to really know what my practice or me personally or what that brand is. Like, you got to have your brand map. I told this story the other day. I was talking at some conference. So my career has been interesting. I worked for Eli Lilly and Company for 10 years. So they're arguably one of the best branding companies in the world. They have, you know, Cymbalta and Prozac and Cialis and now Mounjaro, which is, you know, all rage. And they have a way they go about developing brands. They call it a brand essence map, and it's evolved over time, but it's essentially a similar process. And then when I was at Galderma, they were owned by Nestle, arguably one of the best branding companies in the world. And they actually go through a very similar process, and they call it a brand purpose map. And you know, when you work for the big companies, there's agency partners and templates, and you fill all this out, and it takes months and months and months. But at the end of the day, there's a little basic process you go through to really identify what your brand's all about. And I think if more people kind of took the time to just pause and be like, do I know what my brand is? It's a lot easier to make the decision on, do I need to chase a status level? Do I need to work with this kind of company? Should I hire this person? Is this the type of patient I want in my practice? So you kind of got to go through that process. I kind of have helped a number of people with it, but essentially it's simple. It's, who's your target? What's their persona or their avatar, if you want to use kind of contemporary words? But like, do you have a really clear picture of like, who's the ideal person for your brand? What makes your brand different? Everyone's like, why would they choose your practice over another practice? I was talking to a med spa owner the other day, and he's like, I got thrown for a loop because someone was like, well, why would I choose your spa versus the one across the street? He goes, I didn't have an answer. And I was like, that's because you haven't really identified what your brand's all about.
Okay.
Then you got to know, like, why should you believe that someone that should believe that your brand's different? What's your personality? Are you fun and cool and sexy? Are you scientific and rigid? Are you, you know, empathetic and emotional? There's all kinds of ways you can pick your personality. And then you kind of crystallize it and summarize it. And so the classic example of like a brand essence or brand purpose is BMW. If I said ultimate driving machine, everyone knows that's BMW. You can visually understand it. And I don't see enough practices who can give me that 3, 4, 5, 6 words that like crystallize what their practice or what their personal brand's all about.
Wait, like right here, my science. My sign right here.
Skin.
The science of vibrant, sexy skin at every age.
Yeah, so you've got it.
Science, vibrant, sexy.
Yeah, and,
all
and
ages.
Then you walk into the practice and that's what you feel. And you see it on your social media and you talk to your staff and it comes through. And you probably think about this when you're hiring people or rewarding people. And looking at the type of patients you want in your practice or the type of influencers that you're working with. So you can use all this stuff to really drive your whole strategy, but not enough people do. And then you kind of, you're letting someone else kind of like, you know, wag you. So
we were just chatting about my brand, the Science of Vibrant Sexy Skin at Every Age, and potentially evolving my logo and branding and Also, not wanting to rock the boat, so I want to keep the old people who are familiar with the brand. So a gentle evolution is what you'd suggest?
That's what I think. You know, it's everything's got to stay contemporary. Mm-hmm. Even like the Pepsis of the world, they evolve the brand over time. But they stay true to their essence.
Right? Yeah.
So you stay true to that vibrant, sexy skin idea, but you can kind of contemporize it a little bit. You know, I often get asked the question, well, you know, are you the marketing guy? I'm like, yeah. They're like, well, do you like this logo? Mm. I'm like, well, that, first of all, that's not a marketing question. I'm happy to answer that question. But inevitably, the answer is, it's hard for me to answer yes or no unless I know what you want your brand to be about. Once I know what you want your brand to be about, then we can say whether the logo matches that or not. Mm-hmm. I can still give you my opinion on whether I like it or not. But I'm a 45-year-old guy with, you know, four kids who grew up in the Midwest and all the things that come with kind of my mm-hmm. background. So I may or may not be your target audience. My opinion may or may not matter. Although I do say, you know, I try to be very open-minded. That's why I come talk to customers a lot. I talk to, you know, so I do social media to listen. You know, really good marketers, really good practitioners, really good just people tend to be very open-minded and they tend to listen well. Mm-hmm. You tend to be look to your customers versus trying to like shove your kind of approach down someone's throat.
Exactly. Yeah. These days you walk into stores like Sephora and almost all the bottles look similar. They're very, mm-hmm. you know, clean, small, simple details, small, you know, thin lines. Is it hard to differentiate?
It's hard to differentiate. Even I was
because you kind of have to be cool, like the cool kids. But yeah. How do you stand out then?
Well, and then like even I've been hearing a lot lately on Airbnb. There's been kind of like a this muted neutral, like this like
yes
like
everywhere.
All the Airbnb and so everything starts to look like a sea of sameness, which is good because it kind of that's what people are looking for. But you're also starting to see a little bit of a kind of pendulum swing the other way, where people are beginning to look for unique experiences and differentiated approaches and. It's kind of within the realm of what I want, but like with a little hook. Mm-hmm. Makes it, you know, you keep hearing a lot about like, what's the vibe? Like, I was just, you know, we went to this coffee store in Dallas a few weeks ago.
Yes.
And that's a perfect example. We could have gone to the Starbucks in the hotel lobby and had coffee. Would have been good coffee, or maybe okay coffee, whatever you want to say. Instead, we're like, you know, let's take a 2-minute drive down the road. And this place had a unique offering and like a great decor.
Yeah.
And some fun ways to approach coffee. And I think we paid like $14 for a couple of super special.
Very artisanal. It was worth it.
But it was worth
and
it.
And I still remember it.
So I think you're going to see brands kind of evolve towards more of that. Mm-hmm. You have like, yeah, this fits the kind of norming. Mm-hmm. But you're going to get a little bit, but this is why it's unique and special. And here's something memorable about it. Something that kind of really touched my soul.
Exactly. That's very good to make it experiential.
Yeah.
How are aesthetic companies going to evolve to adapt and help their injectors and their clients better? Yeah. Because like right now, they're not getting coming down on pricing. They're constantly upping the amount of syringes we need to buy to hit whatever tier of participation they want us to be in. So it feels very much like a pay to play. It does not feel like I have this resources at my hand. What do you think they should be doing?
Well, I mean, I kind of go back to what we first talked about is I think you have to take the customer side of things to heart. And if you're just focused on the brand side of things, maybe you'll make different decisions. Mm-hmm. When you just think about the finances or think through your P&L, you make different decisions than when you think about how do I really build a company that customers really, really love. So I've been working with a lot of startup companies right now. And a lot of them are venture capital or private equity backed, or there's people buying practices. And inevitably, the conversations turn to, you know, EBITDA and multiples and exits and equity events. And these are all very exciting. but the problem is you have too many people focused on that. They're not focused on how do I build a really good business. And if you look at the companies that have had great exits and have had great equity events, inevitably what they've done is they've built a great business that meets customer needs in a very unique kind of way.
Mm-hmm.
Those businesses become really highly valued.
Any examples off top of mind?
Oh, I mean, there's a whole bunch of them. I don't really know kind of which one I would point to because it kind of evolves and changes over time.
Mm-hmm.
But in general, the people who focus on building good businesses are the things that get valued really, really highly.
Mm-hmm.
So think about the business necessarily more than kind of thinking through the financial levers of the business.
Well, I'm a little worried about aesthetics because of the recession coming, the election, $6 a gallon gas, $6 a coffee, Starbucks. How much is gas over there?
It's about $3 in Texas.
Oh, Jesus. California. What's going on in California? Yeah. So I'm a little concerned. Yeah. I know I was reading a forecast for 2024. Someone was saying aesthetics in 2019 was an $11 billion valuation, and in 2026 is going to be at $21 billion, almost a 9% compound rate of growth.
Sure.
You think we're off on that?
A little bit. You know, my sense is you can look historically. So in the 08, 09 recession, you know, great financial crisis, there was a big dip. Bounced back and you got back to a longer term growth rate. COVID hit, I mean, that was chaos, right? The whole world shut down. Aesthetics went from flying to zero.
Yes.
But then it kind of bounced way back and now you're kind of here and now you kind of have this kind of uncertainty in the market. And I've certainly talked to a lot of practices who are worried, who, my guess is the long-term trends are still pretty positive.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe before the long-term trend was gonna put us at like a 9 to 11% growth rate into the market. Maybe now we're in the 7 to 9% long term. Mm-hmm. So yeah, short term, should you be worried? Absolutely. Should you be doing things to prepare for economic uncertainty and all those kinds of things? Like 100%.
What should a practice do? A loyalty program, a membership, advertise more, drop our prices? What should we be doing?
Yeah, the things I always say is, like, from what I've seen, there's a few things that make a really good practice in my mind. So one, do you have a really great culture that patients and staff want to be a part of?
Okay.
And you have to focus on culture. You don't want to lose that just because times are tough. Two, are you making it easy for your consumers and patients to shop with you? Because
mm-hmm.
at the end of the day, they are shopping. And the world has changed. Everything is like Shopified. It's so easy to shop on phones, on TikTok, on in the streets. You know, all your credit cards are stored, Apple Pay. It's gotten very easy to shop in general. If you're not making it easy to shop in your practice, you're going to miss it.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not making it easy to book, you're missing it.
Mm-hmm.
I love this example because my wife, you know, I've been in the industry 9 years, and so I know all the people, and so my wife's gotten treated with all kinds of people, and she'll need her Botox or Dysport or whatever toxin she's getting done. And inevitably, she's like, tells me at 9 o'clock at night, after the kids are in bed, she's exhausted, she's like, oh, I need my, you know, Dysport treatment, or Botox treatment, or whichever company I'm working for. I guess now I'm not working for any company, so I don't know what she's using. And she's like, can you take care of that for me? Okay, well, I can either like jump on my phone and log into like one of the providers she goes to because they have online booking set up and book her an appointment, or I can call the next morning or fill out some form and hope someone calls me back. Maybe I answer the phone, maybe it doesn't. That's a really hard experience. So inevitably what I do is I book something for her with someone who makes it easy.
Yeah.
So the companies that make it easy to shop, that make it easy to book, that make it easy to be part of the culture of your practice, that's where you tend to win.
Hmm.
The other kind of classic examples here are, make sure you have recurring revenue streams.
Yeah.
Make sure you have lower cost offerings. And then make sure you're investing into downturns. So perfect example, when I was at Galderma, COVID hit, we had a big question on Restyle and Kiss at the time. Got approval like literally 2 weeks after the whole economy shut down. You're like, what do? We could have just waited a year until everything came back and launched the product. Instead, we said, you know what, like, it's a unique opportunity. Let's invest in this downturn. And let's launch the product. And
mm-hmm.
it was a great product launch and really had a good impact on the industry. And I think those dividends are still working for them today. So you invest in downturns, makes a lot of sense. You got to be smart about it. You don't want to make stupid decisions. But, you know, certainly invest in the patients that you have, the ones that are loyal to your practice. They're not going to go away. They love you. They love mm-hmm. your staff. They love their treatments. So just make sure they have options and offerings for them to continue to be great patients for you.
Mm-hmm.
As long as we don't have a gigantic unemployment issue,
mm-hmm.
I don't think we're going to run into a long-term trend issue on the growth of aesthetics.
Do you think there's a little bit of filler fear right now, and is regenerative aesthetics the answer to that?
I think there's a little bit. That certainly seems to be the trend. That being said, fillers may be a little bit slower, but they're still growing. Certainly certain fillers are growing faster than other ones.
Yeah.
So I think regenerative is definitely coming. You know, I think there's such a proliferation of fillers there for a little while, and the innovation slowed down.
Mm-hmm.
So as long as you continue to have innovation, either in business models or customer approaches or product, you know, attributes, I think you'll continue to see growth. Because at the end of the day, the hyaluronic acid fillers are very proven. They're very safe for the most part. You have to be very careful with them as well.
Yes.
You get great outcomes. Many providers can give you great outcomes, and that resonates for patients.
I really think that there is a little bit of filler fear in patients, but I do feel regenerative aesthetics is going to fill that void, and actually in a good way, because maybe backing off of putting some instant fillers and building facial foundation is the way to go.
Yeah, and you get a lot of this like an evolution. So, you know, toxins and fillers, and maybe regenerative becomes like the next third pillar.
It should, as it should. I really hope it does. Yeah.
But there's a lot to learn on the regenerative side as well. You know, and there's pluses and minuses to those products too.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, so I don't see fillers going away. I see them being part of an overall complement. Mm-hmm. Most practices, most patients I know, once you get into the space, what you really want is you want long-term treatment plans. You want complementary approaches. You want multimodal approaches. That seems to be the best way to take care of patients' skin and health and confidence in the long run.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the day, you know, in this business, we're helping people look and feel better about themselves.
Yes.
It's a great business to be in. And as my wife says, you know, your business is weird because it ends up with me in a chair or a patient in a chair and someone a foot away from their face, either zapping it with a laser or sticking it with a needle. Like, it's just not something you think about every day. So there's a level of trust in the provider that's so important. And there's a level of trust in the products that's so important. So I think the fillers are very trusted products for good reasons. You just got to know when and where to use them and how to complement them with a lot of these emerging technologies.
In Europe and in the rest of the world, there are 200 fillers available and 100 toxins. So I'm just kind of wondering, like, how is the American market going to change as gradually every year there's another toxin,
yeah.
You know, maybe 2 years there's another filler. Do you think American clients, consumers, and injectors are going to be able to, like, stomach all the different choices? Sometimes there's this concept of getting, you know, buyer confusion with too many options out there.
I mean, like, have you ever walked into Sephora?
Oh, yeah.
It's
dizzying, yeah.
You
find your niche.
You find your niche. You know, I've got a 13-year-old who's getting into skincare, which has been really fascinating.
Mm.
She calls me instead of her mom sometimes because I'm in the skincare space. She thinks I make ads for skincare companies, so I probably need to explain the job a little bit more. But it's funny listening to how she chooses and how she listens to her friends and kind of what they're looking for. And so, yeah, there's spaces for all of the products that are going to come. The nice thing about the U.S. is you have a pretty strong barrier to entry because you have to get FDA approval. So you have to have solid manufacturing that's not going to injure people. You have to have proven studies to make sure these products are safe and effective. You've got to have good training programs to make sure people know how to use them. So it creates a barrier to entry that is actually important.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, there's going to be room for all these companies. You're going to move from a duopoly kind of situation to a lot of people offering a lot of different products that are going to help patients and help practices, and they're going to choose different approaches in how they do that. So I'm pretty bullish on the opportunity for more people to come in.
Yeah, more market, more creative ideas, more choices.
Yeah.
But it is good if they come slowly so that it's not like a flood of new products coming all at once.
Yeah, you're not going to see that just because of the timelines, too. It takes a long time to get these things approved, and it's pretty expensive. It's not cheap to do filler trials or toxin trials or even medical device trials. And doing them, you know, the patients in your practice or any other practice, they're pretty discerning. They're paying a lot of money.
They're very educated consumers.
Very educated.
Yeah.
And if they're not going to get a high-quality product, like, you're not going to be able to get away with it. So to win in the U.S., you have to be able to provide quality at scale in a way that really meets the practices and the patient's needs.
So there have been a few big companies that we were kind of looking at case studies, if you had to study, of people who launched with really great success versus people who could have launched slightly better, some failures of products. And what have you learned from that? Do you have a playbook that you would give to industry to say, like, hey guys, it's time to wake up. We need to look at these examples and what are we learning and what are we going to do?
Well, I think there's a lot of learning you can do, I would say. I wouldn't tell my playbook on the podcast.
No, you're going to have to pay for a consultation with Drew for that.
Just like you're not going to let someone come in and you know, get treated without doing a consult. But no, I think I've actually had a lot of people asking me this question because it is interesting. There's a lot of companies that have launched. And I think there's a historical playbook. And that historical playbook worked pretty well. You know, you kind of build sales forces, you work with KOLs, you penetrate the market, you know, have a loyalty program, you do all this kind of stuff. You know, you do some training. The market's evolved a lot, both on the practice side of things, on the technology side of things, and on the service side of things. So I think as you're looking to launch in the future, and this is some of the stuff that I'm thinking about right now, it's like, how do you take a more disruptive approach and recognize some of the changes that are going on in the market? And I think you can launch a little bit differently in ways, again, like, that are very more customer-centric. Like, if you can launch in a way that puts the practice first and makes it easy for a practice to implement a new product, technology, or service, that's great. Like, the hardest thing is when I have practices, or when you have your practice, new company comes, they've got a new product. You know, they tell you, oh, the patient's going to be so excited about it. Patients haven't even heard about it yet. They're going to hear about it, you're going to tell them about it. Mm-hmm. And then, like, we'll just use our stuff. But then their stuff's really hard to use, and it's really hard to integrate into whatever system you have set up in your practice. Mm-hmm. So maybe you try it. If it does work, great, maybe integrate it. But if it's hard, like, you got a busy staff. They got their ways of working. You got to figure out how you can make it easy for them. So a lot of things that I've been working with companies on and set up some of my own ventures are more of, how do you make it easy for a practice to learn and get better educated? And that's kind of the advice I give to the industry right now is, like, you know, figure out a way to make it easier for practices, not harder. Because a lot of things we're doing are making it harder for practices. They might make it easier for your company or your brand, but it's not actually easier for the practice.
Are there things I should be asking companies when they come to me as a business? Like, well, what should I ask for?
Ooh, that's a great question.
And I know that they're harvesting all this data and information from me, from my patients, from my loyalty program signups.
If I were you, I'd actually start asking for, like, what's in it for me a little bit?
Yes.
So, like, you know, it's great that they're giving patients all this loyalty and information they're getting. Like, how does that come back to me? How does it help my practice? How does it help me and my staff get better educated? How does it help us advance our skills?
Yeah, I mean, that's the next level of what the industry needs to do, literally. Yeah.
You're doing all the hard work. Like, why are they helping you?
I really am. I'm giving them the customer. I'm giving them someone for their loyalty and their email marketing techniques, but I don't know what I'm getting out of it.
Yeah, that loyalty doesn't always seem like it's kind of being reciprocated. So I think if you can build these more complementary reciprocal relationships, it'll be really interesting. You know, you probably have some great people you work with already. I would be asking, why can't you work with the people I work with already? Why do I have to do things with your proprietary system? And they do that because it's easy for them to build their own proprietary systems. It's harder to do the other things, but that makes it harder on you.
Yeah. So, I mean, some people say we should just opt out of all these loyalty programs and create our own.
Yeah,
practice-based one. Would you do that?
Yeah, I mean, so I don't know if you want to create your own. I do think, again, back to the what makes a great practice, really good practices in the future have ways to drive recurring revenue. Mm-hmm. Loyalty programs, beauty banks, membership programs, whatever you want to do, they do a great job of driving recurring revenue. Mm-hmm. And by the way, that recurring revenue is good for you. It's also good for your patients. They actually like it.
Yeah.
That's how you buy iPhones and all kinds of stuff, right? This has been the trend for a long time. So I think if you don't have that, you're going to be at a disadvantage as you kind of look to the future. And there's some great companies that are kind of building these for you right now. You could certainly build your own, like all the EMR companies are looking at it. There's bespoke options. So there's lots of ways to get to it. But if you don't have something that makes people feel a part of your practice, you're going to miss out. Because ideally, you have a person coming to your practice, and this is a great practice. Like, you want to be here. You probably want them coming in every month or every 2 months, not just once or twice a year.
Exactly.
So to do that, you need some incentive and some hooks and some services and some reminders. And those are things that loyalty programs do.
Interesting. So. Yeah. It's time for us to grow all that for ourselves, I think. Yeah. Have you seen private equity doing a great job? There's a trend now in aesthetics where large, huge companies with lots of funding are coming in and buying up practices. Is this the future for us? Is this the exit strategy for the typical, you know, private practice individual?
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the trends, it's certainly happening. If you look at ancillary industries, it certainly has happened as well. So I worked in one of these companies too. So I find it hard to believe it's not going to continue. May not be for everybody. But there's certainly a lot of benefits to thinking about that. There's a lot of challenges, too. Not all these things work out. Some of them do great. Some of them don't. If you look at all the ancillary industries, you know, dermatology and others. So you have to be really discerning. Again, it gets back to fit. You got to find the right fit.
Right.
But I think private equity in these kind of roll-ups are going to continue just because there are benefits. Until the companies really figure out how they play differently and support different kinds of practices, there is scale benefits to a lot of these companies that are real. But again, what's your brand? Your brand, maybe you never need to do anything because you've got such a reach through social media and all these other things. Maybe for other people, it's the right time and right place for them to exit. So it's nice that it'll have options, and there will be different kinds of options for people to reap the rewards of the hard work from these great companies and small businesses that they've built. That's the fun part, you know, when you kind of have these small businesses.
Well, I know you get all these meetings and you're talking to these amazing individuals. Yeah. What is new on the horizon with people you're chatting with?
Yeah, it's been kind of fun. everyone's kind of got unique and different things. I'm working with a bunch of different practices, and I swear I get a phone call every day, and someone's like, I need help with X, Y, and Z. I'm like, well, that was not on my radar screen for what we're talking about. But I've got a couple companies that I've worked with lately that I'm really intrigued with. So one, I'm going to start my own thing because I see some opportunities in the training space. So I'm working with some really good partners to kind of think about how we could better serve the training needs of the industry. I don't think they're met quite well enough right now, broadly mm-hmm. across the practice.
Mm-hmm.
There are individuals doing great things. I know you do a great thing with your training, and a number of others do too. But there's some cool things you can do on the training side, so I'm intrigued and interested. More to come there. There's a really neat company I brought me on as a strategic advisor called Sentient Lasers, and I really like their approach. Again, they have this practice-first kind of approach, so kind of whatever your capital needs are in the practice, they can help you, whether it's servicing lasers, buying and selling you new ones, warranting, mm-hmm. all kinds of stuff. They've got a really cool plant. They actually, you know, can, I think, service 84 different devices in your practices.
So, amazing.
Kind of a cool approach. So it's not just like the, I've got my thing and I want to push it to you, but like, hey, what need do you have? How can I meet it?
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a couple of really cool kind of next generation technologies that are coming both in regenerative space and with some other new technologies. So I've been working with all kinds of different people on that stuff. It's been kind of fun, and fun to talk to you about them off camera as well.
Yeah, I can't wait to see what you're going to build with training. That's so necessary because...
Yeah.
There's an explosion of people who want to get into aesthetics, and yep. companies are willing to sell syringes to lots of people, mm-hmm. and training needs to be available every day, not just at the big meetings four times a year.
Well, the thing that I hear, and I see this with my kids too, is like the way you learn has really changed.
Yes.
So like the need that I see over and over is people are like, I don't need like a system or a program or, you know, some like sparkles and dancers to get trained. I literally just want to hear like, who's actually gone through the problem that I'm facing? How did they solve it?
Yeah.
Give me the real deal.
Yeah.
Like none of this, I don't need the polish. I don't need the, you know, program. I don't need the 7-step system. I don't need to be sold anything. I literally just want to learn from people who have been in my shoes.
Yeah.
And so like the fortunate thing for me is I've kind of been in some different shoes now. So I've got a unique appreciation for what that looks like.
Hmm.
And that's the thing when I go talk to practices or, you know, talk to companies I'm working with, I'm just like, you have to put yourself in your customer's shoes. Like, everyone wants to put their shoes onto you.
Yeah.
You got to walk in their shoes and figure out how you can meet their needs.
Very few people do that. I think it's such a necessary strategy, too.
Yeah.
I use that patient-centric approach for my patients. I'm like, how can I make it better for this patient? How can I comp a service or add a layer of luxury that they're not ordinarily going to get anywhere else? So we've been doing some of that here, but I love that idea for corporate to envision that and manifest it.
Yeah, so, and I always tell people I've been, as we're kind of finishing up here, I kind of have my own kind of mentality ethos. So I always tell people, my goal is to do really great things, have fun while we're doing it, and learn things along the way.
Yeah.
So it's been fun kind of working with you over the years because I've always hit those three things.
Yeah.
We've done some great things together. We've had a lot of fun doing it, and I feel like I learned something every time I talk to you.
Every time I talk to you, I learn something. Every single time. I think, like, you just inspired me to be a little bit more raw and organic in my teaching videos and, like, maybe dive more into all the things I've done wrong, all the problems I've seen, and what to do, you know, when the crap hits the fan. And, you know, like, I think real life, daily injector life versus, like, polished, beautiful videos, which we have. We have all of that, and we show a lot of real life on the gram and on live feeds.
Yeah. And all you hear is like, oh, here's the marketing thing I did that worked. Okay, well, what's the marketing thing you did that you just wasted $10,000 and didn't drive one new patient in? Because those happen, too.
Yeah, or the device you bought that didn't really, you know.
Or the company that told you.
Or the company whose stock you bought that just is tanking now.
Instead of getting out at the right time. Yeah, but stock in the space. Everyone tries to play it. They try and time it.
Yeah.
Or the company that's like, no, you're going to be the only one who has this cool new technology. You're exclusive.
Yeah.
And then 2 weeks later, they sold it to the person down the street.
Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm.
You hear those stories, too. But those stories aren't the ones that get talked about. All you hear is, oh, I bought this new device, and I had 100 new patients, and it's so great. And you should buy it, too. And by the way, I get a referral fee if you buy it, but I didn't tell you that. And,
yeah, exactly.
And all those sorts of things happen too.
Yeah, well, thank you for the inspiration. I can't wait to hear more about your training program.
Yeah.
And will I see you at another meeting coming up shortly? You're at all the meetings. You travel a lot.
I don't know what I'm doing next. It's kind of, you play it by ear. When you're in this consulting space, it kind of is a lot of, you know, changes kind of week to week. Some things are well planned out, but a lot of times you're responding to people's needs or questions, and it's kind of the approach that I take when I'm working with their practices and companies that I'm working with. So you'll see me for sure. I think we'll be friends for a long time. We're four kid buddies. So
yeah, that's right. Four kids means you're a survivor, a warrior.
Exactly.
You gotta be a warrior.
It feels like that sometimes, that's for sure.
Well, I can't wait to see how you innovate in aesthetics. I think your influence on brands that are already out there, industry that needs to evolve,
yeah.
Giving them this messaging that they need to be more business-centric to our practices and bring value into my office when you come visit. It's mm-hmm. not just about sell me your brand, let me represent your brand. That's going to be transformative.
Well, maybe we can do some things together. I'm sure we'll find a way to partner.
I'm going to put you on a panel with me coming up soon. That'll be so fun.
That'd be real great.
So, guys, I want you to check out Drew Fine, the amazing Define company. Where can they find your social handles?
So I'm DrewFine24 on Instagram, and then I think it's just Drew-Fine on LinkedIn. I don't have a company website yet. I probably need to get around to that.
Yeah, for sure.
But again, I've been more focused on people and relationships that I want to help and work with. So versus kind of trying to build a company that I'm selling myself on, but I'll get there eventually. But yeah, just Instagram's easy, LinkedIn's easy. Many other people know how to find me.
Okay, next time I see you, I'm going to ask you your brand statement.
Oh, my brand statement.
Your mission
easy.
Statement. Your mission statement. Yes.
Do great. Have fun. Learn something.
Oh, high five. Awesome. That's it for now, guys. Don't forget to find me on my Instagram. It's Beauty by Dr. K, DrKay. And our website is the same, beautybydrk.com. That's where you can find my amazing skincare line and Internal Radiance, our new supplement line. All the things, regenerative aesthetics, and more. Love you and stay beautiful.